We are here, Ricey and Reavers, to take back every bad thing we've ever said about Miguel Sano.
I don't know why you've had a problem with him, Pat.
After Tuesday night, I don't know how it happened that I was down on him a little bit there. I looked up the numbers today, by the way. I ended up writing something. We're doing this package in the Thursday Star Tribune about what's wrong with the Twins at the quarter pole, and I think it's... there's many options, but my target was Miguel, and then he hit three home runs, right? So
just your luck.
But I talked to somebody yesterday, a real good hitting guy. Yesterday morning, I'm talking to him, and basically he says, for 2 weeks, they got to convince Miguel to give him center, to forget about the inside pitch, and to think center field. Try to hit everything to center. Try to change that swing plane. Because he's got this big loopy thing that, you know, he's by putting the bat up high like he does, he's looping to the ball. You can, you know, we can tell that with the Faribault Lakers.
Right.
He's looping to the ball. So you got to hit it, instead of being on plane, you got to hit it. You got to be damn lucky to hit it when you're in a loop, right?
Right.
I mean, when you're on.
Because you reduce your fraction from this to about this.
Yes, that's right. So he's got this loop. Get the bat down on his shoulder, down there, right behind his shoulder instead of up here. But the other thing he was saying, give me center field. Tell him, please, Miguel, give me center field for 2 weeks. Make that your target. Forget the second deck in left field, which is now your target. And when you're a little late, you'll hit it in the right field bleachers, you know, because you're strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a little early or they throw you a breaking ball, your swing will already be there and you'll be hitting home runs to left field. You'll be hit your home runs to left field.
You know what I would do, Pat? I would show him on loop every day the home run he hit Saturday against Oakland, where it almost hit his hands.
Yeah,
and he still went over the right field wall.
And that one was an accident. That had nothing to do That had nothing to do with hitting intellect, but it shows you how strong you are.
It'll say, Miguel, see, this is why you don't need to try to pull at 700 feet.
Yes.
That's how strong you are.
So, but anyway, this conversation I had, he could have wiretapped it when you watched it. He could have been listening when you see what he did last night. And you just got to hope. They didn't look like accidents. You know, they look like he had a plan, right?
The at bat against Lynn when he hit it to center field made me go, whoa, wait a minute. That's a professional at bat right there.
And the little cutter inside, he kind of took a nice swing at it instead of jumping out of the, you know, and following it back. He got on it. And that was when I first saw it, I was in the game at that time. I thought he fisted it because of the way it, but when I saw it, no, he hit the hell out of it.
Oh,
it was
a
screaming liner. And then the one to right field. I mean, he's one of the brutes that can hit the ball to right field and in right center field at Target Field and get it out as a right-handed hitter. Not many of them can. And so, man, if he'd just do it, but you know, he just he doesn't have any discipline as a hitter, and he doesn't have much discipline in his life, I think. But he just can't take it to the next day, you know, usually. He just can't make it, you know. Now, you look back at 19, he was pretty damn good in July, August, and September.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was telling me that Rousen's strategy was rather than beat on a guy and say, you know, you got to change this. You got to change this. You got to try to hit here. He'd say, okay, where do you want to hit the ball? You know, where are you trying to hit the ball? And then he'd say, okay, let's figure out how you can hit the ball there. You know, like pulling everything. And the idea was that after a week or 10 days, the guy'd say, well, I can't hit the ball there. And then he'd be more susceptible to saying, okay,
I should hit it this way.
Yeah. I mean, he was of the belief that the hitters had to convince themselves.
Okay.
Which isn't a bad idea, I don't think. And
but there are certain guys who are equipped to make that decision, correct?
Yes. Well, and I think if you look at that second half of 2019, you'd take that all day long.
Oh, heavens, yes.
22 home runs and 71 games. And, you know, here's the thing about 2019. They hit 307 homer. We had no appreciation for the fact 90% of them had their best year they're ever going to have.
Right.
That was the problem.
Yes.
Kepler, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Best he'll ever be.
Yep.
Garver, way best he'll ever be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it wasn't the atomic baseball completely. It helped that the nuclear baseball helped. But, you know, Polanco, all-star shortstop, right?
Mm-hmm.
2019.
For mostly hitting.
Yeah, mostly hitting, yes, yes. But, you know, we always judge, as I said this a couple of weeks ago, we have this tendency to judge guys by their best year and say, well, this will be a really good club if only.
They all have their career
only,
years.
If only they repeat 2019, and then you start saying, but they can't.
Right.
Because that's it. That's like, you know, we all have our best year at doing something, right? Don't
mm-hmm.
we? And they, you know, it's hard, that's for sure. But, I mean, it was a nice lift for a team that was a corpse, man.
Right.
Oh, God.
Reason number 1,000,001 why we always need Ozzie Guillen to be involved in Major League Baseball, by the way.
Yes.
Did you see the tweet? He says, after the Monday night game, piranhas no more. They are now the guppies.
He does their post game show.
Oh, I thought he was working for MLB Network.
I think. Well,
oh, maybe he's doing both. Maybe he's doing both.
I think he's doing the White Sox post game show.
Fantastic.
With somebody else. Who else? Another goofball, too. They're doing this post game show. I think he's doing that, but
okay.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I haven't seen him yet on MLB Network.
Well, not MLB. It's Fox.
FS1.
Yeah,
yeah. He's doing
that's
that.
What I'm thinking of. Yep.
Which one's Pedro do?
He was doing, well, because he was part of the Fox postseason studio crew.
Pedro's great.
Oh, yeah. He's
Pedro's
he is.
Pedro's terrific. And so yesterday, Tom Rinaldi, you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
At ESPN. Is now at Fox Sports, some entity of Fox Sports.
Okay.
And they're doing these long form podcasts. And And like four or five parters on historical type events.
Cool.
But not, you know, they're trying to do the stories that aren't the most talked about, most famous. And they're doing one on Lyman Bostock being murdered.
Oh.
So I had, he had me on, yes, because he saw, in 88, I did a 100-inch piece on the 10th anniversary and talked to the uncles, talked to the mom, talked to the, you know, people who were in the, talked to the uncle who was driving the car and a great guy. And so, first of all, they sent me a microphone to set up. Did you see that picture?
It
does look like sex toys.
Yes.
With that little feathery thing, it looks like, I don't know, that's the cover for the microphone, but it does look a little provocative.
Let me just put it to you this way. After I retweeted it with that saying, we had some sport with that on the Garage Logic podcast.
Well, and I was saying, hey, once I get this together, I'm in good shape. And then at the end, she said, FedEx, put it back in that box, and there's a thing on there, and ship it back, which is okay. I don't want the damn thing anyway, because I'd have to leave it sitting in the corner because I couldn't disassemble it and then have to put it back together again.
Right.
You should have. There was three of them on Zoom with me saying, no, now you take that, you're trying to explain to me what went next,
okay.
You know? Anyway, but. I was looking up and I'd written something about him again in 2014 or something, you know, just going back. And I had in there, you know, Lyman, one of the great talkers of all time. And I had in there, I can see Lyman on a panel with Pedro Martinez talking baseball. That'd be fantastic because Lyman was...
He was a quote.
Oh, God, was he my favorite all-timer. He wouldn't, you know... to the point he agitated Rodney, because Rodney was moody, you know.
Sure.
Very moody. I got along with him, but there were days that, you know, Rodney was one of those rare people who got grumpier when he was having success, you know. You know, when he was
like, that his way to get himself motivated?
I don't know. When he was hitting 400, he was damn near, I mean, SI and Time Magazine, they'd come in, they'd be okay. But he could see villains, you know. I think maybe to, you know, he didn't want to get overconfident or something.
Okay.
But there'd be days when he'd blow off the media. So we'd all go over and see Lyman and be there for 15 minutes here and, you know, scribbling like crazy because he had comments on everything that ever lived and everything that went on. And, you know, I covered him for his whole time with the Twins, 75, 6, and 7. And if he was in the game, there probably weren't more than about 20 of them in 3 years that didn't have a quote from Lyman about something, you know, because he was so damn easy and to quote. But I was surprised that I had that. I obviously didn't remember having written that, but Lyman and Pedro would have been fantastic.
So you mentioned Rodney, and last night in the broadcast, Bramer told a great story about just how different, or I don't know if it was from him or if he was telling this from the point of somebody else, but how different the game is today than it was back then. Mm-hmm. And it was Rodney, and I forget the other player that Rodney was on first, and second, and I forget who the player was on first. And he says, here's the difference in today's game. Rodney and player B double stole first and second to second and third, and then they each ended up stealing home.
Yeah, that had to be 69 then when he had all his steals at home.
Guess who was at the plate? Harmon.
Yeah, that wasn't a good idea.
But he's just saying they both stole home successfully, but he says there's no chance in today's game you attempt to steal.
I haven't seen a home steal. All the steals at home now are when the guy throw it on to second and the ball goes.
Exactly. Yep.
But as far as straight steal, no. Rodney straight stole 7 times in 69 with Martin as his manager.
He did mention that it was the year that Billy Martin was the manager.
Yeah. But I get all this stuff. Can you imagine what Rodney would hit in the shift era? Well, they wouldn't shift him, you dummies. You think, oh, Rodney's a left-handed hitter. He's coming up. Let's put every guy on that side.
And he'd look and go, huh?
Leave this whole side. Let's use some logic here. If they were doing today what they did now, and they found out he had a lot of ground, if he hit a lot of ground balls, well,
they'd play him straight up.
I mean, he hit the ball to left field more than he hit it to right field. But the third baseman would play 60 feet from home plate, then everybody else would play over there. But they'd take the bunt away from him for sure. You can't give Rodney the bunt for a guy. He's the greatest drag bunter of all time.
And that's the one gripe I've continued to have with Kepler, because they'll show how exaggerated that shift is against him. I'm saying, Max, you know, there is nobody standing here.
This kid from when they... They played Tampa already, right? Did they play Tampa?
No. I don't think so.
Okay. I thought it was against them. The low guy that plays for Tampa. Maybe I was just watching a game.
And the second baseman, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And he's a good hitter, and he can hit home runs. He took 2 of them one day. I watched it. They ran over. They just went like that, and he just, you know, 12 feet from the line, nobody can throw him
so,
out.
So help me understand. Is it just... he doesn't know how to hit it to the opposite field, or is it stubbornness?
No, as far as bunting, I'm talking about.
But oh, okay.
I don't think they want him to.
Even when there's nobody over there.
I mean, if you need one run, you know, in the eighth inning to lead off, but I think they want these guys to take their swings. You know, I don't get it. But, you know, I mean, I don't want Nelson Cruz coming up and bunting, but
Nelson Cruz can hit it to the opposite field.
Yeah, Kepler is there's no reason for a guy like Kepler when he's leading off not to steal at least a few bunt hits and a few other hits that way.
I just don't get it.
Because that, you know, a lot of times, you know, it used to be, okay, well, shift not as dramatically as they do now, but then you get inside pitches. They'll shift now and still throw the ball away. You know, it's still out. You can still go out there and hit it to left. They're not that perfectionist that they can that they can throw everything in her. But a lot of guys, I've seen some clubs that that will take that hit, and I think Tampa is real good.
Oh yeah,
I've
there
seen
are.
Tampa do it; they're good at it. So anyway. That was
so. It's an organizational philosophy more than the
yeah,
hitter.
I don't know. I don't think there's any. I don't know. I haven't seen that much batting practice this year. They don't do it that much, but I haven't seen a bunting practice.
Boy, and I'll tell you what. We were talking about this a little bit before we started, and I don't know what I know. Kirilloff is on his rehab where he's going to try to give it a go tonight in St. Paul. But boy, Pat, I love this Larnach swing. Yeah. He's got a nice swing.
Yeah, he when he starts. Producing, he'll be pretty. Once he gets a little, I heard Smalley say it last night, and he's right. He said, those two guys, you know, Kirilloff, Larnach, and then he mentioned, I think, the Vaughn kid from, he said, they know they can hit. He said, they're rookies, they
come up with a little confidence, yeah.
But they know deep in their heart they can hit.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of rookies who come up who don't know they can hit. You think Kyle Garlick knows he can hit? No.
No.
Well, why is he playing every day, by the way?
What are their options?
Right-handers. Well, they got to have some outfielder, don't they?
Are you clamoring for more Jake Cave?
Well, he's out 60-day DL.
Oh, so I must have missed that.
He did something to his back. He did some very astute move by him. But so who do they got? They got Garlick, Kepler, Rise and left, and... I got one other out. Then Larnach. They do only have four outfielders. So
yeah.
If you're not going to play, Larnach and Wright, you got to play Garlick, I guess.
I would have loved to have put a little truth serum last night into Josh Donaldson when they intentionally walked Arias to get to him.
Oh yeah.
Because Josh seems a little fiery, which I love, by the way.
You know what? I'm watching the game and said, Tony, you crafty old SOB, I would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
Against a right-handed pitcher. Right,
because Arias is going to dump it into left center.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. I mean, Tony's a miserable lout, egomaniac, but he's playing these guys unbelievable on this. Yeah, we on the Yerminator hitting the home run. It's he's just playing them. He's in a. We're doing this in the middle of the game, but my prediction is. Miguel's getting buzzed at some point.
You think so?
Oh, with this guy?
Yeah.
This guy loves to have hitters get hit. And then I think his whole deal was, there's unwritten rules in baseball. And remember that I'm now supporting you on this ridiculous unwritten rule. So when I hit your guy in the neck, you're not upset about it, okay? It's because he...
Oh yeah,
loves to throw at guys.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
It was just funny because Bremer goes, they're walking Arias to get to Donaldson, and Donaldson gets in the box, and you could see the sawdust just coming off that barrel he was gripping so hard.
What the hell is wrong with him at third base? He's kicking it all over the place.
The first play, I thought, what the hell is going on here? The second one was pretty tough, and especially it was wet.
But he's kicking ground balls,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he is.
He's not making good throws. He doesn't charge the ball well. I don't know if he used to, but he
maybe he's
doesn't.
Been told, you got to protect that calf. We can't have you getting hurt again.
Well, hey, he's been playing.
Yeah.
He's not in there today, but he's been playing. So,
So you're saying if they win today and maybe take the two in Anaheim, that they're back, it's happening? Is that what you're thinking?
I think Phil still's got some leftover T-shirts from 2011, right?
2011.
Got back to 44 and 49. So my son, Chris, Mr. Baseball, texted me and said, they have the same record as the 81 team. That's when all the, or 82 team.
Okay.
The first year in the Dome.
Okay.
That's when they traded Smalley, Weiniger, Corbett, and they traded four guys right early in the year.
Okay.
And they brought in Bruno. And so they had all the young guys that ended up winning the World Series. But that team was, he said, they have the same record, but then that team lost 27 out of 31.
Wow.
So I looked it up. April 30th, they had a two-game winning streak. And they were 9-13. And the next two-game winning streak was June 23rd and 24th.
Oh.
And before that red-hot two-game winning streak, They were 16-54. They went from 9-13 to 16, and that's when Gaetti, the great Gaetti, had. He said one day in the clubhouse, he says he's reading the paper and was uptown. He says, "We got to change our name to the Hapless Twins." He said, "Every town we go to, the story saying we're in town says the Hapless Twins come in." He said, "We should change our name to the Hapless Twins.
Rename Minneapolis Hapless." Yeah.
Hapless or something like that. The Hapless Twins. But I was with them when they won the two in a row. And it was like winning games 6 and 7. They were a bunch of satirical, goofy guys. They were in Chicago for one of them, and then Toronto, I think.
Okay.
We got her going now.
But
baby,
when you were watching that, and it's probably difficult to say, but could you at least see signs?
Oh, hell yes. It's completely different than this.
Okay.
You could see the few. You knew Gaetti was a player, and you knew Herbeck was a player, and Puck wasn't there yet. But you knew there were some players here. Gagne wasn't there. Well, the Gagne got there, but I don't think they put him at shortstop.
Say, wasn't Gagne part of the Smalley trade?
Yeah, but I think
he went to the minors.
I think he went to the minors.
Okay,
yeah. But you knew you had something.
Yeah. Well, you've got 3/4 of your infield set, then you should be good.
But it was. They ended up actually. They won 60. So I think they went 44-48 or something like that. Wow. after being 16-54. They lost 102. They were 60-102.
And then they had a decent, was it 83 season they were okay? Or was
they
it 84?
They got RD that year, too.
Oh, they that's
RD
right.
RD in the Smalley trade. RD in the 4 years, the RD era.
Could you imagine him pitching in the Twitter era?
Oh, God, it'd be terrible. It'd be terrible. Poor RD. I would have given anything to have been on the bus, leaving the Anaheim ballpark, heading to the airport for the red eye, when RD got traded, and Puck was running up and down the aisles singing Jimmy Crack Corn, which was RD's theme song when he came in. Puck was running up and down the aisle, leading the whole bus in Jimmy Crack Corn. They were so damn happy he was gone, they couldn't stand it.
What'd they end up getting for?
Nobody disliked him as a guy, but he just broke their heart so damn often. I don't know. I can't remember who they traded. They just basically gave away.
And I was too young to be at the Dome back then, but I'd love to hear the 8,000 screaming fans yelling at him when he'd come into the game.
It was 80. It had to be the spring of 85. Twins were in Orlando. This is hard as I've laughed in my entire life. Tony and RD. Tony's in it. This is this little tiny clubhouse, the size of this right here for a major league team.
Wow.
You're right on top of each other. And I'm talking to RD, always good natured,
I blew another one.
And he's telling me, I said, this is her. How was your winter? Blah, blah. He said, pretty good. He said, except Tony's aunt tried to hit me with her cane. I said, what? So then I get Tony over there. And they were in South Dakota.
On that caravan.
On the caravan.
Yeah, sure.
And Tony and RD and a couple other guys, this might have been 84. I don't know when he might not. And Tony makes him, Gordette's aunt is like the biggest Twins fan in the world, right?
Yes.
So Tony makes him make this 80-mile detour to go see her, right?
Yeah.
And she's kind of sitting, she's sitting in a porch, but not an, like inside a kind of a porch. And Tony's, and she's thrilled as hell. And Tony says, this is whoever it is, whoever was one guy. And this is, one of the broadcasters or something. And this is Ron Davis. And she gets this horrific look on her face, and the way Ray raises her cane, she's going to hit him. and RD's joining and telling the story. You know, that's what, and we were just, I mean, I was crying. I'd love to try to find that piece. I wrote a piece on it. It was, you know.
All right, so I got the full trade details here. The Yankees sent Gagne and Paul Boris to the Twins for Smalley.
And, oh, yeah.
And then
right.
the Twins, August 13th of 1986, the Twins traded him and Duane Coleman to the Chicago Cubs for Julius McDougal, Ray Fontenot, and George Frazier.
Oh, Georgie. Georgie was in the bullpen for the 87 team.
Oh, well, that's right. He was.
Yeah, Georgie. He lost two of those World Series games, I think.
In St. Louis?
I think he was the losing. We have to look it up. He was the losing pitcher in a couple of those games, I think.
I'm going to guess that TK didn't go back to him then.
He was a good guy, too. I remember saying, hey, I looked it up because there was some guy from the White Sox, the Black Sox of 19, when they threw the World Series, mm-hmm. 1919 or whatever it was. And I says, you're the first relief pitcher to lose two games in the World Series who wasn't trying.
How was that comment received, Patrick?
He was a good guy, though. That was the great thing about the White Sox. When they won in 2005, right? You know, nobody in Chicago had won a World Series since 1918.
Wow.
The White Sox. Nobody in Chicago. In 1919, they threw it.
Right.
You know, and of course, the lead is always the Chicago White Sox who have thrown a World Series more recently than they won one, you know, because it was, you know, that was like the last time they'd played in it, I think, when they tried. They hadn't even, no, they lost to the Dodgers in 59, they lost in the Dodgers. The Dodger team that couldn't hit, but ran, stole 20.
Was La Russa managing that club, too?
No, he wasn't, That had to be, I wonder if that was personable Eddie Stanky. What a surly son of a gun he was. But
I can already tell the kind of guy he was by the nickname you've given that that player or coach. Mm-hmm. I knew exactly what you were going to say. Boy, he was a grouchy old man.
Oh, God, he was bad. He came in and I think he came in to manage Texas. And he lasted one day and he quit at Met Stadium.
Wow.
He came in. They hired him. You know, Eddie Stanky wanted to get back in it. And he got in the clubhouse and he decided he couldn't stand the modern player and he quit. I'd have to look it up, but it was at Met Stadium, I believe, where it occurred.
One game, that's a pretty good assessment of your squad.
Well, you know, when Mock got his job in 60 with the, you know, he was going to manage the Millers again and they'd won the Junior World Series in 59 or 58 or something. And he was a real success. He was a Red Sox AAA manager here, and he'd been in Minneapolis a couple, 3 years, I think. And the Phillies manager, Eddie Sawyer, quit on opening day. It'd been bad. They went out and got their ass kicked on opening day, and he quit. They called up
one game and he was done.
And the guy that was running, John Quinn, knew Mock from somewhere and called him up. And Mock was like, they hired Mock before the Miller season even started. He lasted one game.
You're reminding me of a great town ball story. And this was from a friend, so I'm getting this secondhand, but he's very trustworthy. And I'm not going to name the team because I don't want anybody to get in trouble. This was maybe 10, 11 years ago, something like that. And, a guy on this team in the north of the Twin Cities, we'll say. He says, "Say I met this guy at work that plays baseball." And they said, "Well, wow, can't we, you know, invite him to practice in March or whatever." Yeah. And they saw him hit. He's like, "Oh, you can hit a little." And they were a little light on numbers. So they signed him. And he said, because he wasn't from the state, but he met a girl and moved to the area or whatever. But he could play a little bit. He could hit
How did they get him eligible?
Because he was living in within the area requirement for
and nobody had a contract with him.
No, because he had just moved here.
Okay.
And so I can't remember if it was their first game or their second game. It was very early. It's the guy I went to college with and got to know him a little bit. And it might have been their first home game. None of the guys really knew him that well. He was kind of quiet, and all of a sudden he was in one of the outfield spots, and a squad car rolled in, and he took off, jumped the fence and took off running.
Wow, hey.
And they said, well, thanks for everything, bud. Left his bag, left his everything, his equipment. Probably left his car keys.
That's the wonder of town ball right there. Yeah.
I remember him telling me that story, and I was dying laughing. And they were kind of one of those sad, you know, ran teams and whatever. He said, well, if that's going to happen, it was going to happen to us.
Yes. What? Too bad about Trout, huh? 2 months without Manny.
I saw that.
He was having a phenomenal year. I've kind of lost in the shuffle. Somehow, they got the phenomenon of baseball, Ohtani.
Right.
They got the best player in baseball, Trout, and they still stink.
And Rendon. They have Rendon.
He hadn't played all year, but he's been hurt most of the year.
Did not know that.
Yeah, he's been hurt most of the year. But plus, you know, as bad as they needed, I love Rendon. You know, he's the guy with... That when I was watching that World Series, I was the other team, he's the guy I don't want up to the plate, right?
No.
Because he's fantastic, him and Soto. But Ohtani's like, this is incredible.
I know.
This is incredible.
The best part of that.
And these guys are way under five. They shouldn't have spent the money on Rendon. They should have spent it on pitching.
Yeah. But the best part of that Nationals run was they did that the year after Harper left for the Phillies. I was cheering like hell for those guys to win the World Series that year.
And you know, the other thing about baseball is when you sign Harper and the Phillies brought him in and that whole town was going nuts and, you know, and hey, we got Harper and the Phillies will draw $3 million this year. And then if he doesn't hit the first 2 weeks, there's too many games.
Oh, I know.
To keep the myth going, yes. You know what I'm saying?
Unless he's going to hit, 400.
If he's going to hit,
for
fine.
2 months, yeah.
But what I'm saying is, it's, you know, football, you go out and sign a quarterback and you're not going to turn on him for 4 or 5 weeks, right? But in baseball, it could be, let's get you. I thought he was, you know, and the modern fan is so... immediately, you know, they want immediate gratification, doesn't accept the idea that even the best hitters don't hit for 2 weeks.
No.
You know, sometimes, you know. Rodney would hit 150 for 2 weeks.
But they say, why can't he do this every night?
Yeah, he's like, Joe, why doesn't he do that? That's what he's saying about Sano right now. Yeah. Why doesn't he do that every night?
What the hell's going on here?
That would be 480 home runs, Joe. That's why, but anyway. It's, it is a fascinating a game because here's the reasons. In addition to 162, it is, I keep saying this, the thing about these guys are they got to get better five times. Mm-hmm. It's the only sport where you got to get better five times. You know, I don't understand how a guy who has having a hard time catching up to Class A pitching, mm-hmm. will 5 years later be mashing the ball in the big leagues.
Right.
You know? But there's something about adjusting, I guess, to the adjusting your eyes, adjusting your reflexes to hit at a higher level. But the talent it takes to hit. It's the hardest thing in sports. I don't care what anybody says. Not physically, but as a art, mm-hmm. it's the hardest thing to do in sports.
No question.
And how you keep getting better and better and better. And, you know, okay, and it's now just that you've conquered Elizabethan, go face better guys and then better guys and then better guys mm-hmm. and then better guys. So, anyway, it's still how long did that game take last night, by the way? It had to be 4, didn't it?
It was close because I was flipping back and forth between the Wild game.
Was it always 0-0 when you flip back? Well, I'm getting very tired of flipping to the Wild games and seeing 0-0.
Well, here's what's funny is when they score, when the Wild scored first, all right, we're doing this. And then here come the Knights.
14 seconds later.
And
right.
You knew they're in trouble now because the momentum was all on the Vegas side.
I mean, I don't know much about the Knights, but I look at that roster. I don't say, ooh, they got him. You know, I mean,
they have Fleury, the goalie.
They do.
He's damn good still.
Well, our guy won the first game and Fleury won the second game. So
right, right.
I think I told Judd this morning. We should have a height limit on goalies. They can only be 6 feet. And they got to go back to wearing the same pads Gump wore. They take up too much of the net. They get hit with the puck too often.
Right.
We got to make it possible to score.
Or how about stand further away from the net?
Yeah, yeah.
How maybe. About that? Put the goalie circle maybe, out here yeah, instead right. of back
you
got, here.
You can't go back into the... Do something. Do something. God almighty. As I once told Tom Reed... 35 years ago when he was doing Gopher hockey, and I was up covering a series in Duluth, and they went in like, this was back when they settled them. It must have been a playoff game because it was like two overtimes, and he was so hard up for guests, he's got me, and he says, what would you do to improve hockey? I'd say, well, I had one idea. I'd melt the ice and put two baskets down at each end. And he thought it was funny, but I'm not sure his audience did.
He said, well, Patrick, thank you for your time.
I'm not sure whatever the outlet was back then, Midwest Sports Channel or somebody like that. So anyway. All righty. Well, what else? Your guy Jake, did he make it successfully to High Point?
As far as I know, I think he made it because I have not heard otherwise.
Kathy Viola, I wrote the thing on Jake that got in the online. And then Kathy Viola tweeted it out, that welcome to the Rockers, Jake.
Nice.
Kathy Frankser's his pitching coach.
You know? Okay.
And I'm just wondering about if indeed the guy's on the team, I'm wondering about the attitude that Logan Morrison's going to bring to the Rockers. Since he was PO'd that he was making only $6 million when he was playing for the Twins that year. Lance Lynn has done for the failed signees of 18, was it?
Yes.
18? The failed signees of 18, Lynn's done a little better than Logan Morrison.
And made a little bit more money, too.
Yes, yeah. Logan made his six, and then that was his last hit. But he's on that team. You know, some of them can't give it up, right? I mean, for a pitcher, why give it up?
Yeah, because if you could hit 90, someone's going to give you a chance.
You know, if you could get to St. Paul, you're going to be over there sometime.
Right.
You know.
Although we cut loose, what's his name today?
Derek Law.
Yeah.
Guy couldn't get a break or an out.
Or an out.
Luke Farrell is now the latest. He was a pretty good pitcher, but
I did love the build-up to the debut for the kid last night, and then I saw those first couple innings. Wowzers.
I think Bailey, he throws. It said 93 on a couple on the board.
Did it? Okay.
But it doesn't look like a very good breaking ball.
Because Fighting Carver Bulldogs were taking the field last night, so I didn't get a chance to. I could see the updates on my phone, but I didn't get to listen to the game until about 8 o'clock.
6'9", and he sits at about 90, and then the breaking ball's not too. But here's the other thing. You know, his strikeout totals in the minors are huge.
Yep.
But he had about 5 pitches that are strikes in the minor leagues, you know, that they give you the pitch.
Yep.
You're facing big league hitters, you're not getting those pitches.
No.
I mean, it's not just now, it's always been that. I remember Eddie Gardotto was the phenom of Nashville as a starter. And I saw that team because that was supposed to be the future. Cordova was there and all these guys. And Eddie would throw the ball 8 inches off the outside corner and they call a strike. He got up here, and he's not Maddox, right?
Right.
So he'd throw it 2 inches on the corner, and they'd call it a ball. And Eddie had to adjust, you know. And that's what this kid, too. But I think he's going to have to become a 6'9", side armor with a big sweeping breaking ball and you know, kind of go
he's
that
way. He's 6'9"? Holy
he's
crap.
He's 6'9", yeah.
Wow.
There wasn't much there. There wasn't much there.
I didn't just think. The highlights I saw alone, it didn't look very good.
No. But what the hell? Pineda, they put Pineda on the DL. He had some cyst removed or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Is he just another one of those guys? He's just, something's always going to come up during the year?
I guess so, because he's never pitched bad for the Twins as in a stretch.
Outside of when he's been suspended. But yeah.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. When he's available, he's been
He's been pretty good.
Pretty consistent. But he's, you know, he's not available. That's not too often, though, that you can give somebody a start for Pineda, who's taller.
You know, that's true.
He's one of the biggest human beings I've ever seen. So, anyway. All right, let's do this again next week. This is the Ricey and Reavers broadcast. What's the Lakers schedule this weekend?
This is our first twofer, Patrick. We go Friday night at Shakopee, and then Sunday afternoon at Montgomery. The Fighting Mallards on Sunday.
All right, and your ace right hander is now in High Point, North Carolina, but that's okay.
Yeah,
well, maybe he'll be. No, we don't want him back. We want him in the big leagues.
No, you'll love this.
Back for the state.
This is another great town ball story. He went through the whole dugout to say, "Hey, thanks for having me," and we all, of course, said, "Good luck." And then one of the guys he went to high school with, he's in Archambault, and the Archambaults, Patrick, are noted for their bullish honesty and profanity.
Yeah.
And Arch was the last one, and he says, "I'm not wishing you bleeping good luck. I want your ass back here tomorrow."
One of your players, huh?
Yeah. Okay. Well, they've been buddies, you know, since they were in kindergarten or whatever. But yeah, that was pretty good.
He's not related to the Russ Archambault.
No, I don't think so. Okay. I do not think so.
All right. Russ, who ended up indirectly getting our guy Clem exposed.
Yes, he did.
Having, you know, somebody write papers which is now like everybody's writing papers for him.
Well, Clem, that's all you guys
put the banners back up.
That's right.
Put them back up. All right. We'll see you. EcoFun has e-bikes in stock. And why is that important? Because every other bike retailer is out of stock and will not be getting new e-bikes until December or January. You can't even get one for Christmas from them. The weather is warming up, so if you are in the market for an e-bike, scooter, or ATV, go to EcoFun right now. EcoFun Motorsports in Forest Lake. Talk with Tim Bloom, the owner of EcoFun Motorsports in Forest Lake. Tim and his family will help you select the e-bike that is right for you, and they will deliver it to your front door in the metro area. Right now, EcoFun has Bentelli e-bikes and Yamaha Motor Assist bikes in stock. EcoFun also carries the full line of Yamaha scooters, motorcycles, and a wide variety of Yamaha ATVs, including ATVs for kids. Check out EcoFun Motorsports in Forest Lake and online at EcoFunMotorsports.com and tell Tim that old bicycler Patrick Ricey sent you.
This is Reavers once again for Mr. Money Talk, Josh Arnold. And Josh has a very basic question for you. Do you know what you own? You see, Mr. Money Talk's clients, and that's Josh Arnold, by the way, they always know what they own. He has found out that most people that he meets with every single day, they have no idea. Josh has seen retirement portfolios that have a big percentage in bonds, and there are real instances of people that are paying more in commissions and fees than they can possibly make on the rate of return that these bonds currently yield. Josh begs of you, know what you own. You see, trust is often overused, and it's even harder to find. Take it from me that you can trust Josh. Give him a call today for that free 48-minute financial consultation with absolutely zero obligation. Call him at 952-925-5608. Once again, that's 952-925-5608 for Mr. Money Talk, Josh Arnold.
This is Patrick Ricey with the Canopy Group. What does dedication, perseverance, resilience, and accomplishment best describe today? The Canopy Group believes it's the graduating classes of 2021. What we are most proud of for these graduates is their ability to overcome challenges in their pursuit of future opportunities. True to their perseverance and resiliency, these students are finding new ways to celebrate their milestones and their success on this journey. It puts a smile on all of our faces as we drive through communities and see dozens and thousands and hundreds of yard signs. It is amazing that what these graduating students have gone through, and they deserve the spotlight, for they are Minnesota's future. Please join the Canopy Group in honoring your friends, relatives, and neighbors who represent the graduating classes of 2021.